Welcome to Real Medicine, Real Lives. I'm Dr. Yasir Sombol, and together we're showing medical expertise in a human way. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Real Medicine, Real Lives. I'm your host, Dr. Yasir Sombol, and today we're exploring a truth that every healthcare provider and patient should understand. Sometimes what hurts isn't just in the mind or body, but in both. Our guest today, Dr. Jesse Hansen, is a clinical psychologist and neuropsychology specialist with over 25 years of experience bridging ancient wisdom and modern science. He's helped countless people heal trauma by reconnecting the mind, body, and spirit, an approach that's been featured on A&E's Intervention and inspired practitioners across the world. Dr. Hansen, welcome to Real Medicine, Real Lives. Today begin with one of the hardest challenges people face, the kind of trauma that doesn't show up on scans, but still affects every aspect of people's lives and their health. And I can clearly relate to this as a healthcare provider, in which people ask me questions all the time. They have this pain, they have some sort of phenomenon going on that I clearly can't explain, and it's not related to anything I learned in medical school or in my clinical experience, and I really don't know how to answer that question. So I really, really find this topic to be very interesting. And so let's start out, you know, why do so many people carry pain in their bodies even when the wound isn't visible?
Well, first and foremost, thank you so much for having me on as a guest to your show, and thank you for being so open-minded as a physician to recognize that, you know, not everything is scannable, right? Not everything, I mean, eventually it will be as science continues to evolve, but to where we are now, and you also mentioned the ancient wisdom and modern science integration, and that is something that means a lot to me, both as a academically trained professional and also as a human being, a father, and, you know, just a man, is that, you know, I got blessed in my path to be exposed to what I call ancient wisdom, meaning teachings that go back farther and farther into human history that primarily deal with a connection to nature and the understanding of the interconnection of all things, which ironically sort of that theme of interconnectivity of all things, all people connected to nature, to animals, to each other, you know, to each other's feelings, all these elements, is that has been tracked through many ancient scriptures and teachings. And ironically now, when you integrate neuroscience and quantum physics, you get exactly that. You get the breakdown of how everything is interconnected. And even though something can't necessarily be physically measured in matter, it can be measured in electromagnetic energy, which is really what our feelings and our emotions, they ripple from our body in electromagnetic field. And so when we look at disease, illness, all the things that are put into the medical arena, a lot of it is that, and things can evolve to the place where it is measurable on a scan, for example. However, often before that and sometimes after that, there is what I often call in a more colloquial vernacular clinical language, I call it, rather than saying PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, I just like to say trauma residue. We all, my humble belief and loving challenge for our listeners is that whether we want to admit it or not, whether we can have any conscious memory of what may have happened in our childhood or not, and throughout many years, that all of us humans, we do experience trauma, and we do experience and therefore have trauma residue, or the ways in which those imprints stay in us. And that's often what I find when I've had so many people referred to me who have done everything on the medical side and even naturopathy and osteopathy and all these different elements, but haven't yet looked underneath the trunk, haven't looked inside, well, wait, what happened that I haven't really talked about yet? So I think that, you know, is to lead back to your question, is that I would say that so much of us have that pain, is because, like, so many of us haven't really had the opportunity or been educated and informed on how to really properly process our past trauma and even to understand it. And one last quick insight, then I'd love to hear your thoughts on all this, is that for our listeners, to be clear, from a clinical language, trauma is not just physical and sexual assault. It is not just war and car accidents. Those are absolutely all phenomenon that could qualify as trauma, but really trauma is also called developmental trauma, which is attachment trauma, which is generally in a theme of either feeling abandoned and not loved, or inundated or controlled, in some way suppressed. And that's why I make the argument that at some level, there's none of us that can go through our childhood with teachers and sports coaches and family members. Like somewhere in there, something happens where we get some of those patterns put in us. And so that's where I think a lot of times the pain that's coming up isn't actually a problem. It's a teacher. And it's here to help us look at what have I not really addressed yet in my psychological or spiritual growth.
I think that is actually very fascinating, and I can attest to that personally, where I've had some time in my life where I felt like I needed to venture out and seek, help in the sense of speaking to somebody and kind of going through my life and identifying, why I've made certain decisions and so forth. So I think what you're nailing it straight on the head, and I think, and that brings to the next question is, I don't think people realize how this trauma or events that have happened in their life, whether they're, accidents like you said, or other things, personal things, whether it's upbringing, et cetera, and how that affects actually their everyday health, including their sleep, their energy, their mood. Some people just say, "I just can't sleep," and they just really never got to the point of why can't they sleep? Because sleep is a natural part of how we survive, right? And so, why can't you sleep, or why is you're so disturbed when you're asleep, but there's usually some sort of underlying thing that's doing that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to continue, I love the opportunity to speak with yourself as well, medically trained, is that so much of the medical training actually does transfer right over. So when we talked about, the things that we haven't maybe addressed or seen in ourselves, it's because different emotional patterns. The most easy one to describe is the experience of stress. What is stress? Stress is not really this thing out there that is attacking me. It's despite our ego's belief, it is not the kids screaming, it is not the boss, complaining. Stress is a self-created phenomenon that is my ability to relate to a lot of different relationships. How do I deal with someone who is controlling and domineering? Do I know how to hold my grounds, or do I succumb to it and therefore feel stressed out, right? So I lead with that just to say we know very easily in the medical world that stress is a cortisol phenomenon.
Yes.
My state of mind, I then create more cortisol, right? And because of that creation of more cortisol, then certain things biochemically start to happen in my body. And if I repeat that pattern day in, day out, guess who continues to take the toll? Maybe it's the kidney, maybe it's the liver. You could probably tell me better where that all goes in the body, but you see the pattern. And this is, I think, what is often overlooked by both, doctors and patients, psychologists, all of us, is that there really is such an interconnection between the mind and body and the states of emotions. One of my great teachers, Dr. Gabor Mate, he talks about we can accidentally become addicted to certain emotions, even sadness or shame or stress, which is kind of fear and anger, right? And through that repeated use of those emotions, we create certain biochemical cocktails that then run through our organs, impact our neuromuscular patterns, and that's often how we end up, with what is often called disease, could be called dis-ease.
Yeah, no, I think that's great because, I see a lot of people that come to see me, for example, about their blood pressure, and their blood pressure is not controlled, and, they're on all these pills, or they may not be on pills, and they're under a lot of stress. And like you said, cortisol levels can raise your blood pressure. Blood pressure is dynamic. When you're stressed out, your blood pressure goes up. And sometimes if you're in a constant state of stress, that blood pressure can stay high for a long period of time. So I think that leads into the next question. And how do you get patients and physicians to work together to treat trauma and not just the symptoms or the side effects of that trauma, whether it be, a physical side effect or a mental side effect or et cetera.
Before I made the leap of faith to bring myself here to a little mountain in Costa Rica, I had a big city life for quite some time, most of my life, and had the opportunity to go into often, insurance companies and hospitals and different medical practices to do education. And that's the answer. The first thing is simply to bring education to people. Most of the time, my experience having this opportunity with medical doctors is that, like I'm witnessing in yourself, you're grateful of the information, you're grateful of the understanding, and these are things that are just often not taught in the traditional medical academic program. There's tons of other extremely valuable things taught. However, this part, especially around trauma, is usually not included. And so that's one of the simplest first steps, is to just simply, work together to create systemic change so that there's more education for, not only doctors, but even for patients to understand, like, yes, I'm going to give you this blood pressure medication, which, by the way, though I am more of a holistic psychologist and holistically approached person, I am fully supportive of the whole, use of medication and different scenarios. However, I challenge in that it is often used as the only thing, and it ought to be used in conjunction with trauma-informed care, meaning, hey, I'm going to give you this medication. However, I'm also going to ask you to start to learn how to meditate or slow or breathe. I'm going to encourage you to maybe work with this affiliated organization or professional who can help you really look at why that stress pattern is so strong in you in the first place. So there's
Okay.
the integrated care.
So we're going to have to wrap up this segment quick, but I want to take 30 seconds for you to just give people an idea of how they can recognize, that this trauma is what's leading to their health issues and how to address it. And something that, just a simple thing that you could say, if you're not sleeping, it may be because of this reason, for example.
Yeah, if you're not sleeping, it is often because there is unresolved trauma. Again, not necessarily physical, sexual, but some kind of emotional disturbance. And to simply say, you said it earlier, the sort of brushstroke answer to this is that, especially if there is no easy, obvious medical explanation, or like a car accident or something, and there's still symptomology, 99% chance that is what's called psychosomatic, or interconnected between the soma, the body, and the psyche, the mind.
Okay, perfect. All right, everybody. This has been a very interesting segment so far. We got more to talk about. We're going to be right back with Dr. Hansen, and he's going to share how medicine can heal the body but still leave the spirit behind, and what it means to treat the whole person, not just the condition. So hang out here. We're going to be right back in a little bit to discuss this. Stick with us. We'll be right back with more real stories, real breakthroughs, and real lives transformed. And we're back. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol. Let's dive right back into today's medical conversation. Welcome back to Real Medicine, Real Lives. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to Real Medicine, Real Lives and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. On the move, you can also catch the podcast version right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. I'm here with Dr. Jesse Hansen, and we're discussing what happens when the physical side of healing succeeds, but something deeper still feels broken. Medicine can repair the body, but if the heart and spirit aren't part of the process, healing often feels incomplete. Dr. Hansen, welcome back. And I'm really glad that we're talking about this. And in the break, I think I told you, one of my favorite lines is body, mind, and spirit, right? We hear that line all the time. And in my own personal journey, I felt that although I got a trainer and lost 80 pounds, I'm highly educated and work really well, but there was something disconnecting in my life and I just kind of felt lost all the time. And I think that that whole theory comes back to how your body, your mind, and your spirit are all connected. And if one of them's out of alignment, then the other two are always going to remain out of alignment because they're connected. And so I think that goes to this question is, why do people sometimes feel physically okay, but emotionally they're just not okay?
Yeah, such a great question. Such a good, deep question. There's many different directions it could go with this. I would say that first and foremost, to recognize you brought that ancient wisdom back full circle, the interconnectivity of all things. And so often we see where it's like, well, okay, I'm going to go to my shrink for my head, my doctor for my body, church for spirituality. And again, that can work, and that creates some version of wholeness. However, like you mentioned, oftentimes there's this feeling of maybe being a human doing rather than a human being. And so to weave that together, I would say that, we can be doing physically okay, but then these different emotional parts. I am big into what's called parts work, and it's the understanding that though each of us are this one unified body as a human, we all have very many different parts of us. And we say this often, oh, part of me wants to do this, but part of me wishes I was doing that. Part of me wants the pizza, part of me wants the salad. And so we talk about it, but we don't necessarily realize the depth of that in when you bring in the neuroscience, is to realize that parts of self are neural networks. They are different ways of neurological firings of information through the body that cause different behavior patterns, right? And so even though my physical body may check out on a medical exam and get sort of the gold sticker there, if we're really to look at what's happening with behavior patterns, how am I actually showing up? How am I spending the time in my days, in my free time, et cetera? And if that's, there's not a fulfillment there, which the fulfillment part comes from spirit, right? If there's not that there, then we feel emotionally not okay, even though we ought to be happy because we have all the basics of life and, you know, people love us. And so there's a lot of depth in that, and I'll get your response on that, and then I want to go deeper on really what is spirit, you know, from both a colloquial, a traditional sense, but also if we bring in science, can we measure spirit? Right. So I'm
Not
curious
that
if
I'm
you want to
aware
jump
of.
in, Dr. Yasin.
No, not
Did
that
you
I'm
say anything?
aware of. I have no way of measuring somebody's spirit, right? I don't know.
Right. And yet you had the knowing that even though you checked out really good on your physical exams and your mental exams and all this, your intelligence, you had the intuitive knowing that something wasn't there, right? Something was missing. And so first of all, whole context around really what is spirituality versus religiosity. Religion is a choice to follow a specific belief structure that whatever religion we choose, there's often sort of a moral guidebook of what to do and what not to do and how to behave most appropriately within a society. And I think that's great for any of us to choose that and to look at those moral codes. Spirituality to me is to get out of the woo-woo and out of the Zen and the incense of it, which is lovely, but not really a full explanation of it. Spirituality is that journey of asking, who am I? And why? Not okay, I should do this and I should not do this, but why do I do what I do? Especially, like I said, in my free time or in the moments that maybe no one sees me, why are these certain behaviors happening? And ultimately, most people I would say that get on a spiritual journey, it's because they want to not only be a better person, but they want to feel better in their daily life. And that's the reward. And you're living proof of that. I'm living proof of that to do the work involved to integrate mind, body, and spirit. So to me, that's one way, not to measure spirit, but to more clearly articulate what it means to be spiritual doesn't necessarily mean you have to, burn incense and things like this, but is to really be on the pursuit of deeper self-understanding and the humbleness of looking at our own shadow, at the parts of us we don't want to admit exist. And to bring this all back to the full left brain part, Dr. Yasser, is that, this is a running theory, and I'd love to just, it's a conversation, with the medical doctor, which is a great way to bounce it off, but is that what I've come to witness in people, then they would say, oh my goodness, I feel reconnected to my soul, or I feel reconnected to spirit, and even without that language, I feel more purposeful. I feel more connected to myself. What I can track through my neuropsychological understanding of humans is that it seems like this sympathetic neurological activity, activating our sympathetic nervous system, is stress, fear, anxiety, disassociation, and it's sort of farthest from spirit. And that's what happens in the human doing, even the former version of you who was a very successful human but wasn't quite fulfilled, right? We're in more of a sympathetic activation. Parasympathetic brings us in a little bit closer, which is the relax and digest system, but really it's more than that. It is also the part of us that starts to embrace that it's okay to slow down. That it's okay to deepen my breath a little bit, that maybe I could just relax. And then the polyvagal nervous system, which is our original, when the zygote is conceived in conception, what looks almost like a little sea monkey under a microscope, that part of us, that becomes the vagal nerve in the human, which becomes the spinal cord. So it's literally from a cellular and medical perspective, it's the first place of origin of our physical existence from, if we can go there and say, spirit, God, source, whatever you want to call it, some creative energy brought that into a physical form. The vagal nerve, polyvagal nervous system activation is what I would say is how you can measure spirit. And it's probably not a quite fair translation as I hear myself say it, because that spirit is so vast and more than that. But in terms of actually looking at as a doctor to a patient, oh, I have this test where I can actually see your polyvagal nervous system. And if it's activating and moving in a certain rhythm, much like HRV, heart rate variability concept, then I can know that this person is more connected to their spirit, or they're in their heart, they're in their purpose. Whereas if I do the readings and I see that this person exists primarily in sympathetic energy, then I can know, wow, this person probably not only needs a prescription to help them downregulate right away, but also needs to do some inner work to be able to access and activate polyvagal nervous system, AKA spirit. So I'm so curious to hear what you think of this theory. I've never actually shared it with anyone, and I just chose to share it with you.
I actually love this, and let me tell you, and I think I'm going to divert away from our questions for a little bit, because I think as a healthcare provider and what you're talking about, I think I can personally relate to that. And I think that may be a stronger message for our audience, right? That somebody who's so in tune with science actually takes what you're saying and is saying, yes, I have actually lived this transition. So if I take my back several years ago, where I had made some wrong decisions in my life and things had not gone as planned, and I was in a lot of stuff going on, and it was very, very stressful. And I chose wrong ways to deal with that stress. And whether it was taking medicine, whether it was doing something else, resorting to other things, and that didn't help me. And all it did was make matters worse for me, because it may help at the moment, but you wake up the next day and it's really not that great anymore, right? And so it took me a while to get to my all-time low spiritually, actually, to say to myself, this isn't working. And I had always been, a practicing Muslim, and I have, that was a big part of my life, and I had veered away from that. And one morning I just woke up and said, I got to get back to this part of my life that I've really veered away from. And it stopped me from doing. So when you talk about religiosity and the rules and the morals and et cetera, that's probably helpful in that aspect. And it stopped me from making those decisions. And it took me down a different path. And so fast forward years later, after I sought help and wanted just somebody to discuss these things with and look at where my decisions were coming from and why I was making those decisions. And I realized, Yasser wasn't setting boundaries, and Yasser was letting people cross his boundaries, and Yasser was letting people walk all over him, and he wasn't putting things in place and into perspective. Or Yasser was letting, as your website says, not letting his mind be powerful, and he was letting outside events control his reactions all the time. So it's a line I use with my kids. You're in control of your own emotions. You're not in control of what happens outside of that. So now, all the stress of running a private practice or finances or whatever, now I'm like, you know what? I got a higher power looking over me. My job is to just wake up and do my best to be a father, do my best to be a husband, do my best to be a physician. And what comes after that is completely out of my control. If the insurance company doesn't pay me, I can't control that. I can't do anything about it. If I'm overwhelmed with some debt, eventually it's going to work out. But I got to be thankful for what I do have. I have a roof over my head, food on my table, healthy children, etc. So what you're saying makes completely 100% sense to me, because me, as a healthcare provider, has endured that process and has grown from that process to be where I am today. So I love the fact that we're talking about this.
Me too. And thank you so much for your vulnerability. It begets vulnerability. I got a little leaky just listening to you. Really powerful. There's so much in there. Just wanted to say that, yeah, that's exactly it. And you mentioned the higher power. And to me, I agree with you. I think religiosity and spirituality both have their place in our evolution. And as I heard you say all that, I was like, yeah, absolutely. It is, that is one of the most consistent variables that I talk about, having worked with people from all over the world, with all different religions, all different races, all different walks of life. The variable of having faith, and as a pure left-brained, cold-hearted clinician, can say it actually doesn't matter whether the faith is in Christianity, Muslim, Judaism, indigenous practices. What matters is that the person has faith. New parts of the brain open up, and others start to slow down. And as you humbly admitted there in your younger Yasser days, that version of you was, if you, I think you kind of acknowledge it without saying it directly, but you were existing in that motivation, fight or flight, making choices from that place. And it was the return to religiosity and spirituality, how you held it, right? You came to looking for the moral compass, but also coming from a place of, I just want to be a better man, and how you live your life today. It's very touching, very, very touching. And that's exactly what, it's a beautiful case example.
So we're gonna have to wrap this segment up. We're over our time. So we're gonna I want you to share in the next segment. We're gonna talk about with you about how the nervous system traps us in a constant alert state and what it takes to find that rest again, even when the body forgets how. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be right back with Dr. Hansen.
Stick with us. We'll be right back with more real stories, real breakthroughs, and real lives transformed. And we're back. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol. Let's dive right back into today's medical conversation.
Welcome back, everybody, to Real Medicine, Real Lives. I'm here with Dr. Jesse Hansen, and this has been a very stimulating discussion. And we're talking about something that really affects millions of people, and it's the inability to truly rest. After trauma, stress, the nervous system can really stay on high alert, making peace and sleep feel impossible. Welcome back, Dr. Hansen. As you know, the nervous system controls everything. Stress responses, immune function. When you're stuck in overdrive, healing really stalls. And, you know, I like to go through and talk to the viewers about this because, I've personally experienced this. But if you can start out by telling us, how does the nervous system sometimes stay in high alert after even the threat or the stress has gone?
Great question, and it's perfectly off of our last segment with existing in sympathetic nervous system activity too often is the simplest way to understand sleeplessness or sleep disturbances. Now, the deeper question and then the real work becomes, well, why is our nervous system stuck there? Because I like to use the words source codes. Our source codes or our original imprint is back to the polyvagal nervous system and the parasympathetic. In other words, how we are meant to naturally exist is much more in a state of calm and relaxed, yet alert, ready to look out for whatever external stimulation may be coming at us, but not to be on constant high alert. And that's the number one thing I've seen when I've had clients come to me with, you know, sleep-related issues, is that even often when they are taking a sleep medication, they are still having some levels of disturbance, and or they continually need higher doses of that medication, rather than, and where I come in is to say, okay, well, let's really look at where are you not at peace? Sleep is about finding peace. So where are you not at peace? And sometimes it is specific acute traumas, things that have happened either recently or long ago that almost in a PTSD kind of style come as flashes. That's common, but I would say what is most common is that there are simply things like people didn't say what they really wanted to say during the day, whether it was their partner, their boss, their child, their whoever. It's like these, and of course, it's a given day and these add up. And if that is a pattern across time, and then it's obviously the simplest thing is to say, well, say what you mean, say what you want to say, be authentic. But that is a loaded question, a loaded prompt, because it takes a lot of work often to clear why we stopped saying what we really were feeling, right? Which often goes back younger. So I can go deeper, but I want to hear your feedback on that initial stance.
No, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of times when you're not sleeping, there's something underlying, and I can speak to this even till this day, you know, where I say I wake up at 5 a.m. every day. I don't even need an alarm clock anymore. It's just kind of in tuned. And I've attributed it just to the years of medicine and call and being disturbed at night. But I'm pretty sure underneath there's probably things that I am stressed about, whether it's my practice, whether it's finances, whether it's, you know, my children, whether whatever's happening in my personal life, and I'm sure that's affecting me one way or the other, and I'm trying some way to deal with it, and I haven't figured out exactly how to deal with that yet. So I completely agree, you know. I mean, and I think that goes to the heart of the issue, that there's a non-medicine aspect of this, meaning a non-pill solving, a non-pathophysiologic thing that we as physicians don't address enough with patients, and I think patients don't address enough with themselves, because we have become a society of quick fixes, right? It's, I want to lose weight, give me a pill. I want to, you know, get my blood pressure down, give me a pill. But if you say, how about lifestyle modification? Well, that's really hard to do. And so, and we've all been guilty of that. I think every one of us in life has been guilty of saying, I don't have the time for lifestyle modification. But, you know, case in point, I have a patient of mine who's a colleague of mine who I treat for his blood pressure. You know, yesterday he was talking to me about his blood pressure and how he's going to require 3 medicines now, right? And so I finally asked him, I said, do you have a treadmill at home? Because he was like, I don't have time to go work out. I said, well, do you have a treadmill at home? Yeah, I have a treadmill at home. I said, well, why don't you just wake up 30 minutes every morning earlier, get on your treadmill, and walk for 30 minutes? That solves your problem. That's exercise in and of itself. It's a very underrated exercise that where people live in warm climates like Houston or Costa Rica or wherever it may be, it's very easy to do, right? But we just don't. And I said, the hardest part to doing it is actually just doing it. But the moment you make that part of your routine, it becomes like eating, drinking, sleeping, bathing. You're going to say, I need to go for my walk. You know, I need to do this. And then when you get time, change it up on the weekends. Go outside, get some fresh air, look at the scenery. It's amazing what that will do for you.
As simple as it is, it's powerful. And I'm glad to hear that we quickly aligned on, like you said, sort of the gets to the root of it is to say, you know, to answer that question, it is something to do with why is my nervous system so amped up? And so, and the question, the answers we just put out probably are usually not what people want to hear, because like you said, it's a quick fix culture. And it's like, oh, I have to dig deeper. I have to look more into myself. And so hopefully, as I say that half jokingly, half serious, but that we continue to encourage that as a part of, you know, this is an interesting time to be on the planet. And many say there's like a lot of people sort of awakening or starting to become more open and conscious to all of this. So I also am grateful and hope that, you know, this conversation between us helps to help create a new culture that is not just a quick fix culture, but a more spiritual culture, not woo woo spiritual, but spiritual simply meaning, why wouldn't I want to be a better person? Why wouldn't I want to show up for myself with more self-love, which is what walking on the treadmill is, an act of self-love, right? So I also want to take a few minutes before, I know we need to go to the next segment, but is to just say quickly that, you know, so I know that's not the answer, the quick fix answer that many people want to hear. I would say that there are a few things that are more of first phases or first levels of paying attention to that you reminded me of as you were speaking, which is simply to acknowledge, you know, it's as simple as it is. And obviously there's different magnitudes of why people aren't sleeping. For one person, it might have to do with, you know, severely suppressed trauma files that don't want to be looked at, but are kind of coming up. For another, it might be, you know, Dr. Yasser, just, oh my God, I got to get that appointment going. Dr. Jesse, same thing. I've got lists of all these appointments, whatever, is that I often do what I call a left brain dump. Pardon the bluntness of it, but it's a left brain dump right before bed, meaning anything I can do, like to get that email off, to drop a quick note to someone or to myself. These are the things that I would lay in bed thinking about, where I'm like, wait, before I lay down, let me just do this. And that's one simple, easy way. And that might be, you know, for everyone, that's something different. The other is to, you know, make it a challenge to say, well, even if I'm not ready to say it, what are the things that I didn't say today? Almost like a dream journal, but instead a muzzle journal, where it's like, where did I muzzle myself? There was this moment I wanted to say this thing to that person and I didn't. And you start to note it. And then ideally with that practice, starting to take a few risks around, well, maybe I'm going to say this, or I'm going to get this off my chest. Ironically, those simple things, along with, like you said, creating new rituals with walking, new patterns, you know, getting in touch with why don't I care about myself enough to just get on that treadmill for 30 minutes, right? And I agree, once you get past that threshold and it becomes a pattern, it becomes much easier. You see the positive payout, but that initial push to get me on the treadmill may also involve looking at, well, where's my motivation? Why is that not there?
No, I agree. I think that's very enlightening. And so, you know, we're almost to the end of this segment, but I do want to say one of the things that I think we don't address enough, and this may be one of the gentle practices that we can use. I use this line on myself all the time. I stand in the mirror and look at myself and ask myself, what is it that I need to work on, right? I mean, I think that's a non-medicinal way of saying, looking deep into yourself and saying, where is the issue inside of me that I can address? Not all of them at once, but maybe one at a time. And once you start unraveling that onion, one layer at a time, things just get better and better over time. And that's just been my personal experience. And so a lot of times I ask people, when they want to blame the whole world for what's going on, it's, why don't you step back for a second and ask yourself, what role do you play in this? Because nothing happens out of a vacuum, right? I mean, it's rare that it's a vacuum, but it could be based on a decision you made. It could be based on something you did that led. Every decision you make has a consequence, and that's how life really is. And so, you know, taking that moment to do that is really important, I think.
And that is a spiritual practice in my eyes, Yasser. That's a spiritual practice that just by looking yourself in the eyes and asking that question, so good for you, man. I like it.
Hey, I want to give the viewers a chance to, you know, be able to know more about you, your approach to holistic healing, where they can find you, explore your work, and give us some insight. I understand you're going to be having a show, so I'd love the audience to hear about your show coming up.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much. You can reach me and learn more about my approach at hansonhealing.com. Just dropped up there in the thread. That tells about my private practice and some of the other projects I'm working on, include mentalhealth.com, a digital program to help bring more mental health awareness to the planet. And also, as Dr. Yasser said, I'm honored and grateful to Now Media TV that I will be launching my own show in about a month called Lead with Heart. And it's really all about the role of authenticity and vulnerability in leadership. And what came through you, Dr. Yasser, just last segment was an example of you choosing to be vulnerable and how touching that is and powerful that is. And so I'm very excited to launch that show in collaboration with Now Media, and it'll be coming out early December. So we'll have more information soon. Stay tuned.
All right, everybody. We're going to be right back with Dr. Hansen. He's going to, you know, share us some views about why surviving a crisis isn't the end of the journey and how the real healing begins in the aftermath of surviving that crisis. So hang out. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Stick with us. We'll be right back with more real stories, real breakthroughs, and real lives transformed. And we're back. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol. Let's dive right back into today's medical conversation.
Welcome back, everybody, to Real Medicine, Real Lives. Don't miss a second of this show or any other of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand whenever and wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs in both English and Spanish. Prefer podcasts? Listen to Real Medicine, Real Lives anytime on Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. Covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and more. Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always within reach. All right, everybody, we're back, and we're gonna close today's episode with a conversation about what happens after the crisis. So you survived the crisis or the illness or the trauma, but the aftermath still feels overwhelming. Dr. Jesse Hansen has been kind enough to be here and believes that this is where the true healing really begins. And he's gonna try to help walk us through this. When we rebuild our life one intentional breath at a time. Dr. Hansen, welcome back to the show, and thank you again for being here. Clearly, you know, it's very normal that the healing really starts after any trauma, even if it's a physical trauma, right? I mean, all the time when people get their knee replaced or their hip replaced, a surgeon will always tell you that the real healing and the real hardest part of the surgery is the afterwards and the therapy that you have to go through in order to get back to normal functional again. So tell us why the period after a crisis is often the hardest part of healing.
great example with even within the medical world where the process after the trauma is the often the hardest part. And for me, it was very powerful when I was being trained to realize that two or more people can go through the exact same event, and certain people can come out of it with trauma, PTSD symptoms, post-traumatic stress disorder, and certain would not. And what that did for my mind and my understanding was to realize, wow, I'd kind of thought like, okay, the car wreck was the trauma. But just like I mentioned earlier about stress being a phenomenon rather than a thing or a person, trauma, I believe, is the same in the sense that it will, if it's possible, that more than one person can go through the same exact event, but some of the people come out of it untraumatized and some have trauma residue or negative symptomology. That's fascinating to me, first of all, right away, right? That's sort of eye-opening to realize, wow, well, if trauma is not as much the thing that's happened, but as to how I relate to it, that really matters. And from my expertise on more the psychological side, and I would say even with like a knee replacement that you mentioned, there's a lot of emotions that come with that. I'm not good enough, I'm broken now, I'm not capable, I'm weak, there's all these psychological processes that happen with that. And so is the case when there is a more emotional or psychological trauma. There are, on the opposite side, physical symptoms that come with that, as we discussed in earlier segments with biochemical movement into the body. So I think that's one interesting piece to already look at it is, well, why does the aftermath feel so endless? Is because there's a lot of emotions that get brought up in whatever the traumatic experience is, and to move through those is really the full holistic, bi-hemispheric, both brains operating way to heal.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And I think it's really acknowledgement, right, of the actual issue. Did I acknowledge the issue? And society teaches us, okay, it's over, move on, right? And so we're taught to bury whatever that feeling is and move on because you can't deal, it's over, it's done. But really, you're right. I mean, that healing starts after the event because you have to process those feelings. Because when you're going through it, even when people get something as simple as divorce, right? You don't really process the divorce until the divorce is final, right? When you sign on that dotted line and it's finally final, that emotion of that divorce finally hits you. And that door closes on you by yourself. And you're now sharing custody of children and back and forth. And so that trauma from that situation, regardless of whether you thought it was the right decision or not, still has to be dealt with, and because you can't focus on it during the actual event.
I
So
want to play a little bit of wordsmith to say, we hear PTSD quite often, post-traumatic stress disorder. I like to promote, as you said, it can be the real healing, post-traumatic growth disorder, where I went through this thing and I just can't stop growing now. I'm just learning so much because probably a great support and guidance team, both medically and psychologically, but ultimately is this thing I call the EOS, the emotional operating system, or how do we process our emotions? How do we know how to do that? Were we shown that from a young age? Like you said, societally, especially for us men, usually the program is, something happened, get over it, move on, right? And what I see and what the studies have shown that help me see this is that, when people have a more operating system, they can move through an experience that could be traumatic without being traumatized. And where someone that has a less developed emotional operating system can go through something as simple as being cut off on the freeway by a crazy driver and losing their cool and going into a rage or whatever it is. I'm not judging that or saying it's wrong. It's just an example of where the emotional operating system is still young, and so it comes out in that way. The same is true for trauma in a sense, and what I see in my clients is, especially I get to work with them across time for a few months or whatever it is that they get better at it. They get better at understanding how to process emotions, which I always say it's almost like an internal martial art that most of us were not trained in our younger years and often don't get trained in ever. And so long story short, and to loop it back, is that how do you stop the endlessness of it? Is you start with what Dr. Yasser said, which is simply to name it, acknowledge it, not try to shove it under the rug, which psychopharmacological medication without psychotherapeutic supplementary care basically gives a vehicle to shove things under the rug, which is often why people that are only taking medications for issues end up needing to take more medications and more, and new symptoms create. It's because they're not getting to the roots of why that imbalance was there in the first place. So that's how you end it for our listeners. If it feels endless, it's simply because you haven't yet been guided to the root causes of where these sort of biochemical imbalances are coming from.
Right. No, and I think it takes us to the next thing, because it goes back to the earlier segment when we talked about quick fixes, right? And so one of the biggest hindrances, I think, in people's recovery in anything is how slow the process is, right? Because everybody wants everything to be done really quick and get through it and be done and move on, right? That instant gratification. And people tend to forget, I mean, we talked about religion and so forth, right? I mean, God created the world in 7 days, right? And he's God, he could have flicked his fingers and boom, the world would have been done. But there's a process to doing that, right? And so healing is a process. And so how do you give people an expectation to don't feel like they didn't fail, when this recovery process is slow, because recovering from things may take months, may take years, may take a lifetime. It may be an ongoing thing, right? Because we're talking about growth. Growth is an everyday thing for the rest of your life, as long as you're alive, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Now, I think there's two answers that come. One is that I do my best to set expectations out of the gate with people. And what I've seen is when a client is willing to do what I call the inner work or the psychological work, looking at the different parts of who I am and why I do what I do, and they're also ready and willing to engage, whether that's a medical doctor, occupational therapist, whatever that physical side is, and to the mind, body, spirit trifecta, they have some level of developing that faith in their life. When those three elements weave together, Dr. Yasser, I actually see it in usually a 6 to 12 month pattern, in terms of the work is never done, but there are upgrades. So that's one thing I do, is I encourage people that if you can have a more holistic approach to this healing process, honoring all three realms, then it will go faster. And I've seen it now for 25 years. It really does. I stand behind that. I've seen it. It's nothing is perfect. And I'm not saying you never have another negative feeling in your life, but to say it's a significant upgrade, a new normal, right? And then the other piece of it is basically being able to recognize how this all taking a deeper accountability, as we'll say, rather than recognize, taking deeper accountability for how all this came to be. Even if it was a sports injury, oftentimes there's something behind it where it's like there is a part of their personality that loved to just push it really hard. And it was that extra push that took it from a place where the knee would have gotten bruised, where it gotten broken, right? So it's to start to really look at accountability for how did this even come into my reality? Even if it is a physical accident, there's always little clues if we're willing to look deeper.
Right. No, I agree. All right. Well, this has been, an insightful and really actually healing discussion. And I would love for you to give the audience, whoever joined us late, another idea of where they can connect with you, learn more about your work and your programs before we wrap up this segment.
Yeah. Easiest to find me at hansonhealing.com, which is my last name, the word healing.com. And I'm also going to be launching a new show here on Now Media TV in about a month called Lead with Heart, about authenticity and vulnerability's role in leadership, and also expanding our understanding of what is leadership. And so I'm very excited to bring that to anyone that's willing to listen, and grateful for this opportunity to be on your show today, Dr. Yasser. It's been absolutely incredible. And again, thank you for your openness and vulnerability.
Thank you, really beautiful. Dr. Hansen, thank you for reminding us that healing isn't just about surviving. It's about becoming the whole you again. Your message gives us hope to anyone who's still walking the quiet road between recovery and renewal. To our viewers, remember, real medicine heals more than the body, it reaches the mind and the heart. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol, and this has been Real Medicine, Real Lives. Until next time, take care of your whole self, because that's where real healing begins.